Blog Talk Radio. From Insanity to Sane Radio, featuring Ms. Barbara Archer, thank you for tuning in to another anointing broadcast where you will be inspired and God be exalted throughout the earth. We come live every Wednesday and Thursday at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. Please send all inquiries at frominsanitytosane.com. The next voice you hear will be Ms. Barbara Archer.
Hello? Hello?
Dr. Brown?
Yes, hello. How are you today?
I'm doing good. How are you doing this evening?
Very good. Listen, I have you on a desk conference call phone, which is a hard line, but it is on speakerphone. Is that a problem?
No, that is no problem at all. You know, I'm just glad that you are here with us this evening. And I'm just going to say, you know, I was very excited when I first got the press release for you. And I was like, you know what, this is right up and down the alley for this particular platform, you know, and you discuss so many different things, and I want to talk about some of them this evening, if you don't mind. You just have a long history of, you have a doctorate degree in psychology, and just tell us a little bit about the kickstart your relationship now, move on or move out.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for those kind words. Actually, I'm very passionate about it. My whole thrust has been to help people. And what I like about Kickstart Your Relationship Now, Move On and Move Out, is that it certainly is a couples therapy book. They can read it one page at a time and talk about the book instead of talking about diapers. But it's also about the individual. So I put more emphasis on the individual getting to know their own values and figuring out what they want and need, and then turning to their partner and saying, I need, I want, I hope, I fear, or whatever, and begin that dialogue. So really, all relationships begin with ourselves first. I just wanted to say that. And and there's a, of course, as you could probably see from the cover, there's something says called the 72-hour rule, a better way to relate. So I have lots of techniques in the book. It's based on communication. I give lots of examples. But it's really about how to execute, and I mean that in a positive way, how to implement new ways of behaving, thinking, and operating, communicating in the relationship. You know, people hobble along in these relationships, and we all had frustrations in our relationships, but people stay for too long, really, in relationships that are painful or hurtful or non-growing, and they feel stuck, but they're not doing anything different about it. And so that's why I wrote the book. And move on or move out, well, you can pretty much take it any way you want. It could mean, my first emphasis is it's about moving on within yourself. I would meet a lot of women that, you know, were married, and this is not gender bias. I mean, alcoholism goes both ways, but they're with a male partner or husband who was completely, you know, inebriated and alcohol-induced and totally addicted to alcohol. And their world had become so narrow, they were just sitting there waiting for him to go to sleep or to not, you know, be angry that night. And so, you know, of course, I would emphasize leaving, but that sometimes there was too much fear cycling around that. So my emphasis, and I was very straight up about it, was to give them new ways of behaving for themselves so that they would be more enriched to be able to go take that community college class at night, to go out to lunch with their girlfriends, to go take golf lessons or do whatever they wanted or yoga, but to start inserting themselves in the relationship so that they can begin to flower and blossom a little bit more. And then that way, I would say, at least they're more enriched, even though they're consciously deciding to stay in the relationship. Of course, you and I know that ultimately when someone goes through those kinds of changes and they're going to individual therapy, and I'm not a long-term therapist, by the way, and they start making those positive changes, they came to a natural place often where they would look and say, what am I doing here? And so the move out part could also mean that maybe it's time to move out.
Right.
And not just for an alcoholic husband, but just because the other person's not going, or they're blaming you, or they'll say, I drop dead before I go to therapy. In other words, they're just going to point their fingers at you and say, this is your problem, I'm not changing, and so the marriage or the relationship is stuck.
Right, because it's hard for anyone to change if they don't realize and admit that they need to change, you know, and I call that a place of insanity. You know, and I know that also well.
Yes.
I know that also well in my own personal life, you know. But tell us, so everything really boils down to just a breakdown in communication, because sometimes, and I see this a lot with men are not the best communicators, you know. And then sometimes when we don't have that as a woman, we feel that our husbands or our boyfriends are not communicating with us. Sometimes that can call us to withdraw ourselves. So how do you get to a place when you have someone that is not a great communicator and then that woman that will withdraw and get back to that place where she's in her comfort zone? Because maybe she wants to be vulnerable, and then the moment she steps out of her vulnerability, then there's a breakdown in that communication, and then that can cause her to go back to her safe zone where she's most safe at. How do you get from A to B? How do you do it?
Yes, and if I don't answer your question, stop me right in the middle and say, Margo, you're not answering me correctly. I would say this, that, you know, with couples, I would see, you know, one was the lioness, or could be the lion, you know, roaring like a lion, filling the airwaves, trying to be heard, and the other person was hiding behind the rock. And I'd say, you know, you're doing all the work, and the other person wants to come out and play, but, you know, you're roaring so loudly, they're hiding, you know, so they're very avoidant. And the long and short of it is that maybe if you're somebody like me and you're probably talking too much, maybe it's about taking a step back and checking in with your partner and saying, what do you think? Or what did you hear me say? Or what do you want? You know? And or I notice we haven't talked in a long time and I feel awkward around you. And I kind of think you feel the same way because I see you doing this when I'm in the room. And sweetheart, I still love you and I want this to work. What do you need from me so we can move forward? So beginning the dialogue, but when one person's doing the talking or the yelling and the other person's shut down or avoiding, it's not really a dialogue. So everything is about balance. So my first thrust would say to try to even out the communication a little more, have the person that doesn't talk too much to talk more, and the speaker to listen and let them speak instead of saying, they say, oh, I don't know. And don't let them off the hook. Just say, I know you know, and I really want to hear what you have to say. And it's hard work because you're in a relationship, and I'm talking about doing the therapy together while you're in the relationship. It's not easy, but it's exactly what you said, changing up your approach. And the way I always say it is, if you're shaking your left leg and your left arm over and over and over, and you keep doing that, why would you expect a different outcome? I mean, nothing's changed, right? So you got to switch up and do your right leg and your right arm. And if that's too similar because they're both legs and arms, I'm speaking figuratively, then you need to twirl your head around. You need to insert something different so you can have a different deliverable outcome.
Right.
So that's number one. And number two, there are some very concrete things. I could certainly talk about the 72-hour rule if you want, and I'll do that in just one second. But
yes, please do.
Real simple thing, sure. It's don't blame. Don't say you this and you that, because, you know, when you point the finger, you, I know you know this, there's three fingers, the middle finger, ring finger, baby finger pointing right back at me. So I'm just projecting onto you my stuff. So no blaming. Don't say you, say I, pronoun I. That's not a selfish thing. Speak for yourself. Don't editorialize the other person's behavior. So don't blame. Don't bring up the past. Don't say you. Don't assume. See, people get very reactive. They hear something and they get really angry. But maybe if you just checked in and said, well, do you mean the doorknob or do you need the picture frame? And you say, well, Margo, I mean the picture frame. I go, oh, good, because I was starting to get upset. So you don't have to get upset immediately. You need to check in and find out, are you accurate in getting upset? Because maybe you're assuming or misassuming. Most assumption is misassumption. So that whole process of clarifying, crystallizing, making it concrete, checking in, those are really foundations for good communication. But if I can fast forward, I will also say the 72-hour rule, which is a great way to argue. We will have discussions that are arguments. But I said it many years, for years with my couples, I say, you know, someday I'm going to write a book and it's going to be about the 72-hour rule. And, of course, they go, well, what's that? Because nobody heard of it. I made it up. But it has a two-prong process. One is language, which is very here and now. So that would look like I'm picking on the guys tonight, but as the guy sitting on the couch, he goes, if I've told you once, I've told you 19,000 times, or you're saying the same thing you said 8 months ago, and I would say stop, because it doesn't matter about 19,000 other times. It doesn't matter about 8 months. Turn to her and tell her what you're thinking, what you're feeling, what's going on for you right now in this moment. And you'd be amazed how you might have to say that three times before somebody really kind of gets grounded and say, right now, you know, instead of thinking about the past. So the language is very important, here and now, in this moment, I'm thinking, I'm feeling. And the other part of that is literally 72 hours, and I want to give a caveat to that. So I don't even know what is today, Wednesday. It's Wednesday evening, so I guess that would mean maybe, I don't know what 72 hours is, maybe it's a Monday morning or Sunday night. So if my husband does something that really hurt me at the time and I'm still stewing on it, I have a choice within 72 hours. I can truly let it go. This is not about just saying, oh, I didn't bring it up and I'm still upset about it. No. If I'm still stewing on it, I've got to bring it up within 72 hours. But if I can let it go and truly let it float away and relax and say, you know what, it's not worth bringing it up. I don't need to bring it up. I'm cool. Then let it go away. But if it did happen in 72 hours, and let's say I got really upset 72 hours ago, like hurt, and now I'm kind of angry, I need to bring that up and say, you know, Saturday night when you said that, I was hurt, but now I'm kind of stewing on it. And you know what, I need to tell you, I'm kind of ticked off. So we're having a dialogue. Now, the big interviewing question from people that interview me say, so are you saying that if somebody has an affair, they just need to give it up in 72 hours? And I would say, absolutely not. The 72-hour rule is for when the couple is not in crisis. And if someone has just had an affair, they're definitely in crisis. But the goal would be that at some point when they are both starting to motivated towards moving on the relationship, I'm talking about working on the relationship, there's a beginning indicators of forgiveness because of the affair, and they're coming to therapy or they're starting to talk to each other without judgment, then I would insert the 72-hour rule. And once they can manage arguments, what I would see with couples, and I'm almost done, is that they would bring the here and now, and little things weren't upsetting them anymore because they were flushing it out as it happened. They weren't stuffing it under the rug. That was very important. And then they began to trust themselves as an individual and their partner that they could actually have a full conversation and not have a big blow up. And they'd come back to therapy and they'd be smiling. I go, what? Why are you smiling? They go, we are doing the 72-hour rule and it totally works. But tonight we want to talk about something that happened 7 years ago, and we want to bring it up with you. And I go, that's perfectly fine. So then they would be using the 72-hour rule tools to bring up something that was very painful that had never been talked about or that had been shoved under the rug or there was a lot of pain and anger about. And they would start cleaning house, so to speak, what was under the rug, and bring it up and really express themselves.
Wow. Now, you know what, Dr. Brown, I just want to discuss this because I know so often, you know, women, I know myself, I'm like this. Sometimes I have a hard time expressing exactly what I'm feeling, you know, at that moment. And then it's like, and then all of a sudden it will just come out. And then when it does come out, sometimes it don't come out in the best way possible. You know, how do you get to a place that you can that you know exactly how to express your wants, needs, and desires to your partner, you know, especially if you have a hard time verbalizing it. You know, it's like I can hear it inside my head, but for some reason I have a hard time speaking it out of my mouth. So could you just touch that? Because I get a lot of that from a lot of women that I speak with and I talk with all the time. You know, so help us in that way, because I think sometimes that we struggle with that as women, especially because some women don't like, they don't like arguments, you know, so sometimes they can be quiet because they just want to keep the peace. But sometimes you got to raise hell in order to have peace.
That's right, and to be heard. But, you know, and I always wonder, is that a human thing or is that a female thing? I have seen it in men, but mostly, like you said, in females. And it's a very challenging question. So this is two parts or maybe more. I think, one, it's challenging because it means paying attention to the inside of yourself as you're thinking about speaking or needing to speak, and this is before you blurt it out. This is about all those emotions of, should I say it, or I want to say it, or you start to say it, but he's still going, rah, 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 and you can't get a word in edgewise. So it's kind of monitoring what's your internal process, and the more you can pay attention to that, you know, you may stumble a few times, but you'll get better at it. And I think it's a really important tool because it's your own boundary of self, and then you're paying more attention to what you're feeling rather than that other person might be, I'm not saying they always do this, but that they're projecting onto you. And so then that what that leads to, and I get really excited actually, this is a very important topic, thank you for bringing it up, is that when you start paying attention to yourself, and you start noticing, and whether your knees get tight or your chest is heavy or you can't find your voice because your throat's tight or you get really excited about something or you have an angry thought, but you're monitoring your whole body and feelings and even thoughts, then you become calmer, actually. You begin to get more grounded because then you're defining yourself versus that other person. So let's say he or she, that other person is blah, blah, and very excited and very upset and doing all the, you could look and say, I'll just pick on the guys again and say, look at my beautiful husband. He is all wound up. What is his problem tonight? And be kind of observing him without, if you were looking at me right now, and I would say without him or my partner putting that big fishing hook right in the corner of my mouth and hooking me like a fish and sucking me into that world. I'm taking the fishing hook out, I'm noticing him, and I'm noticing me. And I'm not getting emotionally caught up in all that. I'm either feeling sorry for him because he's so upset, or I'm listening to his concerns even though he's yelling it inappropriately, and then I'm finding my space to express myself. But in the other part of that answer is, what if you just blurted out? And I think it's all good. What I would teach people in therapy is they'd be hesitant, like, oh, I don't want to, you know, say the wrong thing. I said, well, say that. Say, you know what, I know this is going to come out crooked. This is probably going to come out wrong, but I'm just going to blurt it out, and then give me a minute. I'll try to clean it up in a minute. So I would encourage them to blurt and just say it. And, of course, now you have to have, if you're not having a therapist in the room, your partner has to kind of be contractually agreeing to let you blurt without saying, well, blah, 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 and jumping in with their own opinion, giving you a chance to say, now let me clean that up. But what I really wanted to say is, when I get frustrated, I'm not thinking and I want to say this, and I feel like you're not hearing me. I feel like you're not listening to me, and when you don't listen and I don't feel heard, I feel alone in this marriage. So it really gives you a new way of finding that voice. So you might blurt it out at first, but you regain traction, so to speak, as you begin to, if you're allowed to in the relationship, to have a voice to keep modifying that until you find a more, which I say, I don't want to say gentle, but maybe a less threatening or less defensive way or less hurtful way of saying it. So I always say, like I said before, it's not what you say, it's how you say it.
Right, right, right. Now, I just have a question. Now, now you also speak about that it's four tips to turn arguments into helpful, constructive discussions. Because so often, you know, I think that the reason why people have a lot of arguments is because I think everything goes back to communication, communicating with your partner, you know. And it may even be on your job or in your career, you know what I'm saying, because we're always going to be interacting with other people, so we need to really have good communication skills. And sometimes we don't communicate well, then we're going to get into our arguments. Do you feel that?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so how do we turn that around? How do we turn it around? Because I know I've been married three times, you know, and after the third marriage, I can no longer blame the spouses, you know what I'm saying? I had to take a deeper look at Barbara then. I'm like, okay, Barbara, it's something in you, you know what I'm saying? So I had to go through a transformation part of my life, you know, and I was able to put, you know, a lot came into place, you know, things that I had not dealt with in the past, you know. But I know myself, like, sometimes if I feel that someone has offended me, you know, then I get on the defense. So anything that you say to me at that time, I completely shut down, and I'm ready to go war with you, you know what I'm saying,
yeah.
Especially in that relationship. So how do we turn those arguments, you know, so by that way that we can still let our partner know what we're thinking and how we're feeling without blowing our top? Because sometimes if we feel that they're not listening to us, that's
yes.
when we feel like, okay, you know what, I have to let this person know how I'm feeling. So how help yes. us to understand that, Dr. Brown.
Well, I'll do my best. And you said some very important tips there yourself. And congratulations to you for all the work you've done, I can tell. And you said something that I absolutely love. I'd love to write another book, and it says, own your stuff, you know. We have to own us. We have to own us.
Right.
I had a couple once come in, and he turned and said, so why are we here? You know, I mean, I'm not your typical therapist, but I did ask that at the opening, like, why are we here? And he said, well, we're here because I this and I that. And he completely owned it. And I went, oh, my gosh, this is wonderful, because they both owned their role. I said, you've already been doing your therapy before you came here. This is, we're going to progress quite rapidly here, because you already are not in denial and you're owning your part of the dance. So owning in, looking within, it goes back to a few seconds ago what I said about monitoring yourself, knowing yourself, and managing self in the conversation. But to take it a little bit further, I think the first step, if you are monitoring and managing, even just noticing that you're starting to get really angry. Now, I'm a cognitive therapist,
right.
And cognitive is just a fancy word for thoughts. Thoughts, feelings, and behavior. So if I'm angry, I am co-contributing to my emotion of anger by saying something that's angry producing. And in a relationship, what we tend to do is we conclude they're hurting me, they're, you know, mean to me, or they don't love me or something. And from that fear and sadness, we pop into irritability. Now, that's too therapeutic, so let me make it simple. The first
okay.
step, before you have a choice to have an emotion. So even if you're not noticing what you said to yourself, if you notice the emotion, and it's a negative emotion, which is fear, sadness, anxiety, or anger, and I'm sure there's others, I would caution you, instead of reacting from that emotional place, to notice, oh my gosh, I'm really anxious right now, and turn to my partner and say, you just said blah, blah, blah. Did you mean... what did you mean by that? Or are you saying this? And clarifying, asking a checking in with your partner. That's what I'm saying. Check in with partner. Find out what they
okay.
really
okay.
mean. And then you can decide, excuse me, to get ticked off. But first you have to step out of that for a minute and use your brain and use your mind to ask a question. And not like, are you saying this? I'm talking about... are you saying this? You know, I'm starting to get really upset here, but I want to check in with you. Are you saying this or are you saying that? Because, you know, I'm unclear. And you go, oh, no, I'm saying blah, blah, blah. Or, yeah, I'm saying that. Well, why are you saying that? That gets my dander up. What's up with that? And without going pop goes the weasel, without popping into irritability and anger or rage, trying to keep the conversation focused on what did they say? Why? What do they mean by saying it? What are their intentions? And so what is it they need by saying that? And if you can focus around the purpose of them saying it, then, and as long as it's not blaming you and not owning their own stuff, then you can begin that dialogue of saying, I heard you say this and I felt like this when you said it, but I'm glad that you're expressing that, and now I want to express my reaction to that. And I know that sounds so therapeutic, I apologize. But really, when you practice these things, it can become very automatic, actually. So the first part is noticing yourself, and the second part, before you react, is like a little tiny pause button. Check in. What are you saying when you say it? What do you mean by that? I'm not getting it. you know, not with an attitude, but check in and try to get elicit more information, and then you can decide to be angry.
Right.
You know, and it's okay to be angry. I mean, sometimes we are angry, but not as a default position of, because when you're the person that does the yelling, eventually the other person will just go behind the rock and they'll stop talking to you. And then you're really stuck.
Right. Wow. You know, because that is so, you know, so needed. I think that we just lack good communication skills. And I think that women would be better communicators with their spouses, you know, if men really took the time to really care about and listen to our needs, you know, and what we have to say. And, you know, because sometimes men, they just put themselves ahead of us, you know, and they want their needs and everything met, but they don't take time to concentrate on the woman. And I believe that if they feed us more than what they do, they would get a better return. You know, we would.
You're
do,
absolutely right.
I do believe that women would do everything that we can because we're just nurturing people, you know.
Yeah.
And that's just how God made us. And I believe that if we're happy, you're going to be happy, you know.
Yeah.
But if we're not happy, because that is my motto, if I'm not happy, guess what? You're not going to be happy. Because I feel if my needs is not being met, why should yours? You know, so I think that, you know, it's just.
Yeah, and that's the tip
that you
mentioned, a very important thing, actually. Some people keep score. I had one woman that kept score how many diapers she changed compared to him. It's like, oh, my God. So I want to comment on your comment, but what I want to tell you is a follow-up to that. As I said to her, actually, for some reason, and some therapists would never do this, some therapists always do this. It's quite controversial in the field, but I'm going to reveal something very quickly here, that even though I saw them as a couple, they asked, I didn't announce it, she says, can I come in for a session by myself? And then he did the same. Now, there's a dilemma with that. Sometimes if you might hear a secret and then you have to bring it back to the couple's therapy. So it's really tenuous when you see one partner by themselves, especially if they're going to sit there and excuse my language, but complain about the other person the whole hour. That's not going to work. But in this particular case, I got her on her own, silently, quietly, to agree that she would stop counting those diapers, and that she wasn't going to nag at him, and that, because nagging is a huge libido killer, and that, because, you know, he feels like she's the mom, and she feels like she's the mom, and he's the son, and she's turned off, and he's turned off. But long story short, she just went about her business and cooked a great dinner and did the shopping without complaining. And do you know what happened? He stopped bicycling 100 miles every weekend, and he started wanting to stay with her more. And that just naturally evolved into this partnership that was collaborative and communicative. It was the simplest of things. Like, she stopped competing and keeping score with a lot of resentment. But in answer to your question, oh my gosh, I hope I remember it. I don't know when the time's up for this conference, but what I would say is that in couples, I would see couples, and he would say, well, it's like this. He goes, if she would just have sex with me, I would, you know, talk to her. And she goes, well, if he would just talk to me, I would have sex with him. So there was this huge impasse because she wanted to connect, and of course he wanted to connect at a different level. But the way you framed it was really lovely, Barbara. It really is about acknowledging the other person. I mean, what if we talked to our boss like that? What if we turned our back and walked away and our boss is telling us to do something? I mean, we would never do that. I mean, our job could be threatened by that.
Right.
And we don't do that in our relationships. I would see couples that are amazing parents. I mean, they're taking, and this is, I hope this isn't gender bias, but they're taking the little girl to ballet, not saying that she doesn't play soccer also, and taking the boy to soccer, and they're doing all these activities and art lessons and blah, 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 and they have no time for themselves, and they're not doing date night. And I said, look, if you put, I would go so far as to say 12-15%. If you put 12-15% of the energy you're putting into your parenting into your coupleness, you probably wouldn't even be here on my couch. So, you know, it's just about balancing the energy. You have to connect. You have to talk. You have to spend time together. You have to be able to talk about something else besides the diapers.
That is so true. That is so true. You know what, Dr. Brown, I have thoroughly enjoyed you this evening, you know, and we are all out of time now, but I just thank you so much for just coming, you know, just calling into the studio and just having this discussion with me, because I've been advertising it for weeks, And my ladies have been very excited about it because this platform is for the mature women, because a lot of women finding themselves today, 40 and older, they're finding themselves divorced, where this should be their time that their children are grown and out of the house. Now they find themselves having to start all over again. You know, and how do you do that, you know? And can you trust? Because some women have been bruised and hurt, you know, maybe infidelity issues, trust issues, you know. So there's so many different things there, you know. And I just thank you for just sharing that insight with us. I'm going to definitely reach back out to your publicist tomorrow, because I definitely want to bring you back on my other platform that I have.
Yeah.
And so by that way, we can do part two of this interview, because I really enjoyed it, and I just know there's so much more that what you have to give us that we didn't get in this half hour. And we got a lot, but I know there's more, and we just want to just get everything out of you that what you can possibly give to help the women 40 and older.
Well, you know,
not that I don't care about the younger generation, you know, but
and I'm sorry I kept saying diapers. I mean, we could definitely have a conversation about the woman that's going back on the dating field. But thank you so much for that. I would be honored to come back. And you are an absolute delight. You know why you're so great at what you do is because you've done the work and you have the insight and you have the passion and the intelligence, and I thank you for that.
Oh, thank you. You know what? I consider that, I count that an honor with someone of your caliber to say those words to me. So thank you so much.
Thank
you, all of y'all, for listening this evening. We're going to have Dr. Brown back in the studio real soon. So continue to follow us on Real Woman, Real Talk. And thank you so much, Dr. Brown. And you have yourself a wonderful evening. And to everyone else, see you next Wednesday at 6:30 Eastern Standard Time. Good night, everyone.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye,
thank
Dr.
you.
Brown.
Bye-bye. Thank you.